Hey, this is Lucky. The podcast you're about to listen to is part of the Professional Casual Network. To find more podcasts like this, please visit professionalcasual.com.
The Professional Casual Network has gear. If you're looking to get some sweet merch from Beards, Ears, and Skulls, Grim Podcast, Perilous Adventure, Arachne, and Infinity Podcast, or a whole lot more, you can check out streamlabs.com/professionalcasualnetwork1/merch. Also, don't go to Built Bar anymore. They're not a sponsor and they're dead to us. So head over to monumenthobbies.com and use code professionalcasual at checkout for 5% off every single order you possibly, you know, like order for like paints and board games and stuff. Right? Thanks.
Hey, Best Fans, before we get into the episode today, I just want to go ahead and shout out two events. One is the Beards, Ears, and Skulls Treasure Hunt that is October 4th at 11 a.m. in Amesbury, Massachusetts. I think it's Amesbury. Doesn't matter. Anyways, it's put on by our very own Brooks, and it's going to be an incredible event. We should be there. So if you want to head over to Best Coast Pairings and look up Beards, Ears, and Skulls Treasure Hunt, you should be able to see the event there. Also, Everwinter is an absolutely phenomenal time. It is December 5th through the 7th at the Hyatt Regency in downtown Boston. It is quite the awesome event, and Brooks, I believe, is also running the Old World tournament that is going on there, or a narrative event. If you want some more information, head over to our Discord. All right, let's start the episode. Hey, my electric casuals, and welcome to another episode of Beards, Ears, and Skulls, the best old world pocket.
I almost beat you.
On the internet, I'm Taylor, your personal lizard, and with me is Dan.
Hi. We have some shtick today.
We got a little shtick. As always, before we get started, I want to just send a huge dowie thank you to our beautiful and wonderful patrons who support us over on patreon.com/professionalcasual. These folks help us do what we do every day, keep the lights on, and keep Tim from eating.
Lizard.
It's so good.
I'll keep that in the back pocket.
Oh, man. Huge.
So stupid, but I love it.
It's so good. Special thank you to our current big subbies of X-Paxis, Rob, Iron Maze, Tau, Dagna, Briar Mage, Cider Drinker, Kilted Sparky, Random Guy, Cliff Jumper, Velicenda, Pagan Prince, David, Handsome Andy, Brooks, Chris Dillard, Cord, and Bastion. Love seeing that name. Love seeing that name.
Very exciting.
And then we have, as always, our Electric Casuals tier, ladies and gentlemen. If you want to show your support to this show specifically, head over to patreon.com/professionalcasual. And sign up for the Electric Casuals tier, where we have Lou G, Tony M, Meerkat, Stefan, Rev, Right Mad, Cliff, Elite Eight Showdown was canceled, Anthony, Manuel, the Neil Harris, Lil Willie, Carlos, and Nick Barron. Nick Barron always makes me think of that dude who did Wild and Out. He was a big old, I think he was a Nickelodeon guy.
Oh.
Wild and Out. Nick Cannon. Know.
Oh, Nick Cannon.
Yeah. So Nick Barron, guess what? You're Nick Cannon, but cool. Not that Nick Cannon is not cool. I don't know if he's cool anymore. Is Nick Cannon cool, everybody?
I don't think so.
Is he a lizard?
I'm not really sure.
He's a lizard, isn't he?
Is he a lizard? No, lizards are a good thing, isn't it?
Lizards are S tier.
That's why we're trying to keep Tim from eating his lizard.
Oh, that sounds weird now.
Yeah.
But today, ladies and gents, today we are talking about, I don't know if you've ever heard of Cathay before, but they have two arcane journals now.
Excuse you.
Huh?
Grand Cathay.
Grand Cathay, excuse me. It's the Cathay,
how
but
dare you, sir?
How dare I not grand my Cathays?
What do you think? It's like some country of
settling the lizard lands. But Dan's got the Cathay, the Grand Cathay, the Dawn of the Storm Dragon book. Look at it. Look at your little mitts.
I got it right here in my hands. Yeah, it's interesting that they call it an arcane journal because it's really a campaign book.
Yeah, I don't understand their need to call everything an arcane journal. But listen, I don't work for the company, so cool. As long as they give us more stuff.
Right. Like, yeah, it has an Army of Infamy kind of, and more magic items for Grand Cathay. So it has that parts of an arcane journal, and it has fluff, but like so much more of the lore is, I mean, most of the book is lore, which is cool. We're getting actual new story here.
Sure.
You know, things that actually happened in the past, but never did until now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
With, you know, I haven't read too much of it yet. I haven't had a chance as a teacher. I just finished first week of school.
Yeah.
So it's been crazy just trying to get back into the swing of things after summer. But it's still a cool book. It's got tons of awesome new art, which is nice because for so long, all the art in Warhammer books has been recycled, you know, ad nauseum over and over and over again. Sometimes they add a, you know, patina to it to make it look different. Instead of just black and white, it's a bit of a sepia. But I'm showing Taylor this one of Dueling Dragons. We got a Cathayan dragon versus a Chaos dragon.
Yeah, that's
so dope.
This is
an amazing piece.
That's so dope. I wish I knew
who did it, but they don't credit individual images. They just, do they even get list illustrators anymore?
Art done by art person.
Right. I mean, obviously they should credit at least the artist. They used to have authors for these, but they don't anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. It doesn't even lit. I don't see on the like copyright page, anything about artists. Cause they used to at least at the very minimum list who did the cover.
Right.
I don't even see that anymore. You can't store it in a retrieval system. I see that.
Wait, what?
It's a little, you know, legal things. It's like no part of this publication may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means, electronic, mechanical, photocopying, recording, otherwise, without the prior permission of the publisher.
Well, dang. Send me straight to jail. Anyways, I do see there's this a dope image of Miao Ying.
Yeah, she's like, super cool.
Maybe in the inside cover or something like that, but where she's coming down like almost Thor Avatar style.
Bum, bum, bum.
Right? Big old lightning and all that. So cool.
Yeah.
So cool.
She looks great. And we know we saw her rules in the first book that she is awesome. She's crazy good.
Yeah. I didn't realize her dragon form was as big as it is as a mini.
Yeah. Like, it's gigantic, apparently.
It's very large.
The picture on the back cover shows how. It's like is taller probably than a sentinel,
and they're not small.
No, it's a huge mini. Would love to paint one up.
And I just want to point out on the front cover, because it's, again, this is all I can really see, is the beauty of the Grand Cathay ships, like the actual ships. They're really, really cool. And then a big old sentinel in the background.
I'd really want to give this cover artist credit to my gut reaction is this, I think it's Paul Dayton, but I don't really know. Just look at the individual soldiers in the foreground and how different they look from each other.
Yeah, so like, detailed.
Yeah, the artist really took the time to make them look individual, where they could have easily just, you know, basically done the same face four times.
Right. The person on the left looks so much more aged than the person in the foreground.
Yeah, he's got a little scar below his eye and whatnot.
Right.
Like,
that's crazy.
Really, really great job. Wish I could give credit to the artist.
Yeah.
Just says pictures used for illustrative purposes only.
Oh, okay. Well,
that, yeah, then, obviously that's what pictures do. What?
Well, you know, you got to make sure, I guess. What? Whatever, man. I just work here. Anyways, apparently there's a whole bunch of new rules in there, and a lot of it's terrain, which I'm very happy about because I love terrain and I love terrain rules. And it's got some new scenarios in there as well. And then multiplayer rules as well. Is that what I saw?
A little bit. Yeah. And there's not a ton for that, but it's nice to see more.
You know,
as we've always said, like any addition to the game is welcome. We love it.
Yep.
It just shows that there's more to this than just line up and charge at each other. Like, there's so much depth to this game. There's so much you can do. My favorite part is the new building rules, kind of like return of building rules, but new building rules. And then, yeah, there is an arcane journal kind of stuffed in at the end, an army of infamy, but let's just talk about that first. Let's get it out of the way.
Okay.
So it looks like, let's see, your normal stuff, 50% of characters, right, which could be Miao Ying, 0 to 1, Shugengan Lord or Lord Magistrate per 1,000 points. And then Shugengan, Gate Masters, Gatekeepers, and Strategists, right? Kind of your normal stuff. 25% on core, which can be Jade Warriors, 0 to 1 Jade Lancers per 1,000 is core.
Man, this sounds so familiar.
Right? It's weird. It's only like there's two troops. Anyways, 50% for special on Jade Lancers, 0 to 3 War Machines per 1,000 points, Fire Rain, Rocket Battery, or the Cannon. The Kanan, as it is.
Yeah.
And then 25% on Sky Lanterns or End Sentinels, right? What's interesting in this one, 33% of Mercenaries from Empire of Mans.
Well, before we go to the Mercenaries, I just want to talk about how different this is from the Cathayan list.
Okay, go ahead.
So the only difference is really characters in the Grand Army, you can take 0 to 1 Cathayan Dragons per 1,000 points. And this one, you can just take Miao Ying.
Uh-huh.
Which is the only Cathayan dragon we have right now anyway.
Sure. Yeah. Yep. Yep.
With no indication there's one coming anytime soon. The rest of the character allotment is exactly the same. Core, exactly the same. Special is the same, except you can take... They added a little bit. They took... The only thing is they took away being able to take a Sentinel or Sky Lantern, depending on who your general is.
In special?
Yeah, that's okay, literally the only difference.
So they reduced your options. Cool.
Reduced options and special.
Uh-huh.
Only change.
And then is Mercenaries the same? Is it still 33%?
No, in the Grand Army, Mercenaries is 20%. And then they have, you know, allies with Dwarves, Empire, Bretonnia, Wood Elves, and High Elves. But the Grand Cathay, our Armies of Infamy don't have allies listed usually.
Right.
Instead, this has mercenaries.
Yep.
Very specific mercenaries.
Yeah, it's an extremely specific list. So 33% of Empires of Mans, to which you are allowed 0 to 1 Captain, Master Mage, Priest of Sigmar, or Priest of Ulric per 1,000 points. And then State Troops, State Missile Troops, Free Company, Militia, and Empire Archers, and 0 to 1 units of Pistoliers or Outriders per 1,000 points. And this is, I really think, just showing that this is kind of that Grand Cathay army that's marching into the Empire to, like, help make sure they don't all die.
Yeah. And it's part of the fluff is the I know we try to get away from the term fluff anymore. Part of the lore is that it really is, as Cathay is here, they're like, hey, we're here to help you, but we'll hire people, your people, to fight alongside us. Which seems kind of weird. It seems like it should be the opposite way.
Correct.
Like, I haven't had time to read through too much of the lore to find out why it's not like, hey, we're here to sell our services. To me, that makes more sense. But the whole thing is that Cathay and Miao Ying especially, you know, they kind of like foresaw or had far visions of this invasion of chaos. So they're like, hey, we need to go here and stop it, because if they take over the Empire, what else is going to stop them? They're just going to expand from there. So we have to go, like, cut it off at the roots, basically, is the idea. Mm-hmm. My big issue with this is that you don't get anything fun in the Mercenaries.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
No stank? Come on.
Right? But, like... I don't know. Like, the characters, I think the best one here is probably a Master Mage. Mm-hmm. It's pretty cool because you get access to different and more lores and cheaper. Because the only other way to get magic in Cathay is the Shugengan Lord on the Longma. So now you can have cheaper wizards on foot, which is nice, I think. And, you know, Empire Wizards can use whatever lore. So you have access to a bunch more spells.
Yep.
The Priest of Sigmar, Priest of Ulric, that can be cool more from a narrative standpoint. I think they're fine,
sure.
But they're not like, oh, I can't believe this has been added to the list. And then captains, and you can only have one captain.
For 1,000 points.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I guess if you want a little bit of melee punch, or maybe give them the dragon bow or something like that. I don't really know why you take a captain here when I feel like the Cathayan versions of that character are just better.
Right. And I mean, like you said, with the bow, if you give him any black powder stuff, it makes him shoot farther for this list specifically. So,
right. The
that
first
could
turn,
be,
right?
Yeah. Well, no, it's any time, the first time any unit That's arm of the handgun shoots. Yeah.
Oh, just the first time any unit shoots. Great.
Yep. Which doesn't make any sense to me. If it's better black powder, it should be every time, but whatever.
Yeah. I don't know.
We're gonna come into the Empire, we're gonna hire your troops, and then we're going to give them one shot of better black powder.
We give them a little bit of black, we're paying them in black powder, so they get a little bit.
Yeah.
But being able to take state troops, state missile troops, free company, or archers is kind of like, okay, yeah, you can add, like, I feel like the Jade Warriors are already better than state troops anyway.
Sure.
Because they have Will of the Dragon and get buffs every round.
Right.
Obviously, your Empire guys aren't going to benefit from that, so you're losing synergy. State missile troops is like, I like crossbows a fair bit, but we've talked so much about how just basic ballistic still shooting is not great.
Mm-hmm.
I think the best option from those is archers, because they're skirmishers and they can, like, scout and whatnot. I think those would be the best for, like, filling needs in the Cathayan army.
Yeah. And that's kind of one of the things about this here is you have cheaper troops. You have cheaper infantry, which Cathay, honestly, you know, obviously their infantry is really fantastic, but you pay out the wazoo for it.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas you can take a bunch of state troops with, what are those things? Detachments, right? For relatively cheap, which is nice.
That is nice.
You know, but at the same time, I'd rather have Miao Ying and then a Shigengan Lord and then a Sky Lantern and a Sentinel and a Cannon. And
if you're playing Cathay, you want to play Cathay, I feel like. I'd rather have
better things.
Yeah, Pistoliers and Outriders is kind of nice in there. Obviously, sure, Pistoliers are not well-liked because of their impetuous. Mm-hmm. You'd rather be shooting pistols than hitting people with your pistols in combat. But Outriders is nice. Having a bunch of repeater handguns can be pretty sweet.
Yep.
I forget if they have any other options anymore. No, just repeater handguns. But that's still good. You know,
and the first time they shoot, it's +3 inches.
And there's, like, lore in here, little blurbs about how great Cathayan black powder weapons are. They're better than anything the Empire has ever made. But the only place we see them is in the Sky Lanterns when they're crane guns. Like, I feel like what people wanted from a second Cathayan journal was more Cathayan options.
Yeah.
Like, I think this is genius from a selling models point of view. I have our Empire. I have state troops. I have missile troops. I have archers. I have captains and wizards and warrior priests, both Sigmar and Ulrich, actually.
Yep.
So I could easily grab some Cathay, like a battalion, you know, easily isn't if I had the money for it, I could grab a battalion and boom, now I have a Jade Fleet army with a bunch of Cathay. I think it's awesome that way to be like, hey, you got an Empire army. You can start to dabble with Cathay and then grow it out into a full Cathay army. I think that's awesome.
But that's not true at all, though, Dan.
Why?
The reason that's not true at all is because you need a Cathay army and then you dabble lightly into Empire, right? With this Jade Fleet list. Like, you need a Cathay army.
Most of it, yeah.
You need to spend 25% of core, and then you need
characters.
Like, it's, I don't know. It would be one of those things where you would take the battalion for Cathay, right? And then if you have the 33% of mercenaries for Empire, you could absolutely build this list, right?
Yeah, it's kind of what I'm saying is I feel like I could already fill out the 33% of, like, go the full 33% of mercenaries of what I have for Empire. And then I just have 2/3 of the army to build for Cathay. Granted, that's still a lot of money out of my pocket. You're talking a battalion, probably a Shigengan Lord model. If you're playing Jade Fleet, you might as well get Miao Ying. But you're also going to want a Lantern and a Sentinel because they look awesome.
Yeah.
You know, it's not going to be cost effective, but that's not what this game is anyway.
Yeah.
It's not exactly what I was hoping for from, you know, because we knew ahead of time that it was going to be Cathay and Empire. It's not exactly what I wanted. I was not expecting them to be mercenaries. I thought they were just going to be part of the army.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like, core, 1+ Jade Warriors, state troops, veteran state troops.
Mm-hmm.
Thing. Like, mm-hmm. I thought they were just going to be part of the army. I don't really understand why they're mercenaries. I think, you know, they made lore to fit that. But they do have, I guess you talked about one of their special rules, the Cthayan Black Powder. They also have the Mercenary Handgun Drill. Once a game, each unit of, or detachment of state missile troops in a Jade Fleet Army can fire with one additional rank.
That's pretty cool.
Nice. I feel like it can encourage you to take bigger units of missile troops.
Sure.
Like if you have 20 handgunners, 10 wide, you get to shoot with all 20 of them one turn. But again,
yeah, and then, you know, shooting. That first Cthayan Black Powder, the first time you do it, you could shoot an additional rank and increase it by 3 inches if you needed to. But I feel like that's something you would want to do if they were less than half range, right?
I think it'd be, well, increasing your half range by an inch and a half, that's a pretty fringe case where it's actually going to make a difference.
Agreed.
It might. That plus one to hit is a big deal. Mm-hmm. The only thing they have is unity and harmony, which is so funny to me that the Empire guys actually make the Cathay better. So it says the soldiers of Grand Cathay are renowned for their devotion to the protection of their homeland, but will fight and die beside their allies to ensure their towns and villagers are kept free from danger. So any Jade Warriors or Jade Lancers within 3 inches of a friendly mercenary unit can reroll the hit rolls of one during the combat phase.
That's really dope.
I kind of wish the lore there was more like they're showing off to show how much they are. So they're going to roll better. They're going to reroll. It's easily the best special rule for the army.
Sure.
Making your already pretty good infantry and cavalry that much better. Like, how often are they going to be hitting on threes, rerolling ones now with Will the Dragon giving them weapon skill 5, Miao Ying's probably in the army. They could very well have weapon skill 6 and then rerolling ones. They're going to hit all the time.
Yeah. So I think this is, especially that little lore piece there, just hammering the nail of this is old world Sigmarites.
Ooh.
You know what I mean?
Where it's like, oh my gosh, they're just the best ever and they're the nicest guys and they just do everything they can for everyone all the time and they have no evil.
And it's like, dude, why is it? They are we talked about this. They're the Tau, right? When Tau were first introduced and they were just the greatest civilization that ever happened. And it's like, this is another one of those things. Like, we're just going to come from our little misty islands and we're going to be the best.
Well, yeah.
And they're the newest. We're good friends with everyone. And I'm like, okay.
Right? I think we're going to see some darkness creep in with the Cathay stuff eventually.
Good. I hope so.
I mean, they have to, though. Otherwise, it's not really Warhammer. And that's what... Right. You're saying a number of people have been complaining about that already, where it's kind of like, well, they don't seem that Warhammery because there's no grimness to them, really.
Yeah. But the best part of the whole thing is, hey, your gigantic Sky Lanterns that you can take, do you want up to 2 of them to be able to ambush?
For 15 points a model?
I mean, yeah, that sounds awesome. Not only that, you can reroll the die when you ambush, which means you can turn that 1 you roll into a 1.
But why? They're already so fast. Why would you want to bother ambushing?
Dan, you don't know.
They already fly 8. They can, like, turn on a dime. I think they can take Vanguard.
I think so, yeah. I'll take a look.
No, Scout. They have Scout.
Oh, yeah. So why would you ambush?
Right. I feel like Scout is just a better rule than ambush, but GW thinks it's the opposite way around. So it's like, you could buy a Scout for a point, but ambush costs you 15. Like, why? Ambush is objectively worse. You can't get them until at least turn 2. So I've already lost a round of shooting from your lantern, which it's great at. And then the chances of it actually showing up on round 2, yes, it's a 4+ rerolling, but you're never going to make it.
And they're built with scouts. You don't even have to pay for it. They just
I was just using it as an example.
Why would you buy this?
It has feigned flight, it has fire and flee. Like, it has so many movement rules already. Why would you bother paying for ambush?
Don't worry,
2,000 points can take it. 0 to 1 per 1,000 points can use this rule.
It's so insane.
I don't get it. And 15 points for that? Like, make it free. you're already playing an Army of Infamy, so you're already restricted in what you can take.
Yeah.
especially with balloons, much more restricted than usual. And I don't get why it's 15 points. It boggles my mind. Like, maybe make it 5 points if you really want to give it a point value. But I feel like it should be free. It's a special rule for this army. Just make it free. Nobody likes ambush anyway. I don't get it.
I don't get it.
One thing that is nice about the Empire stuff being mercenaries, I thought it was one of the special rules, but it's just a note below the mercenaries that they don't have misbehaving mercenaries. So they're really you don't have to roll to see if they show up drunk or anything like that.
I missed that.
They're there.
Because I was going to say, like, hey, out of your 6 units that you bought with your mercenary, your 33% mercenaries, yeah, one of them is just going to be drunk. Right. But no, that's good. That's good.
Yeah. I think it's necessary to be a focus of the list.
Yeah, completely agreed. By the way, the 0 to 1 per 1,000 points. So you're playing 2,000 points, right? You got 3 war balloons because they're absolutely incredible. Yeah. Two out of those 3 $160 models. You can have a worse special rule for 15 extra points. Like, I can't fathom who decided that was an idea.
Right. Do you want to not have your 160 point model on the board for potentially 4 turns?
$160.
Did I say points?
Yes. Dollars.
Yeah, dollars. Yeah. Your $160 model just doesn't show up till turn 5 because you rolled garbage.
What an idea.
It's going to happen.
What an idea. You know what? We should actually make the plastic model kit cost more because now you can buy ambush with it.
Ugh.
Stellar.
There's so much I love about this game. I think I legitimately think this is the best version of Warhammer Fantasy that I've played. Yes. But there are things that just make me go, why? What are you thinking? Who playtested this? Clearly nobody. Sometimes I think they just pull it out of a hat and they're like, yeah, 15 points sounds good. Everybody likes ambushers. It's a cool rule.
It's the best rule ever. Every Beastman player ambushes everything they own.
Right? I don't understand their obsession with making ambush a roll.
Yeah.
But why do you have to roll for it? It's part of the battle plan. I don't have to roll for anybody else to show up.
Well, that's the thing. This could be a whole podcast. How do we fix ambush, right? Like, maybe we'll put that on the list. How do we fix ambush? Let's not talk about this right now. Let's go to multiplayer games. Because I'll sit here for 45 minutes to talk about that frame.
I think that's a great idea to table that. That's one that we'll get heated on probably because we both love the concept of ambush.
Oh, it's so dope.
And I think other games just do it better. Like, I don't think they've ever done ambush well in a edition of Warhammer that I've played.
Episode 76, How to Make Ambush Better. Anyways, moving on.
How to make ambush worth it.
How to make ambush a thing.
All right, so multiplayer games. We got one page of rules here. There's really not much. I don't know if you're able to read this at all yet.
Yeah,
there's not too much going on here, unfortunately. They're like, hey, you know, you can just play with more people, like, you know, have 2 people take charge of one army or whatever. They talk about, like, why don't you have one person play the allies of another? So they don't have a bunch of hard and fast rules there. But they do add in a couple little things like, the king is dead. When scoring the king is dead in multiplayer games where there's a primary and secondary force, if the enemy general is the primary force has been slain, it's fled off the battlefield or is fleeing, you win a bonus of 100 victory points. If it's a secondary force general, then it's 50 points.
Yep.
Which again, they don't really have rules for primary, secondary here.
Yeah, they do. Players are free to discuss amongst themselves as to which force should be considered the primary force if they feel one suits the narrative better than the other.
Oh, I see.
Under army composition. Yep. So it's the muster list containing the largest points allowance will be considered the primary. Any other forces on the same side are secondary.
So there's not really many rules for this. Just kind of like, here's some ideas. I was very disappointed by this page. I'll be honest. I was like, yeah, multiplayer rules. Maybe we'll get something in the vein of Triumph and Treachery. And it's like, not even close.
Imagine.
The only other thing we get here is trophies of war. When you're looking at capturing enemy standards, they win a bonus of 50 victory points for every enemy standard claim as a trophy. Additionally, if the BSB of the primary force has been slain, fled, or fleeing, it's 50. If it's the BSB for the secondary, it's 25.
Womp womp. Who cares?
So, like, that's really it.
That's it. That's all that's on
all
the page.
There is.
Yep.
And then the thing about alliances, it's just like basically, it even just says, like, hey, yeah, you can use uneasy or suspicious allies.
Yeah, just do what feels right.
Well, it's like just follow the normal rules for allies. So why did you even have a paragraph here? Like, it's literally a paragraph of actual rules, which is disappointing because it could have been a lot, so much more. Maybe we'll get something like another Triumph and Treachery, you know, old world edition. I know everybody would love that because
oh my gosh,
that have discovered Triumph and Treachery later are like, oh my God, this is such a great way to play this game.
So much fun. Like the three times we played it.
It's fantastic and it's ridiculous in the best of ways. So if you haven't played the Triumph and Treachery, actually find like an old book is probably just completely cost prohibitive.
Correct. With all of the things, because it also came with like coins and a deck of cards and a whole bunch of stuff, dude. It was so good.
You want quick describe what it was?
Yeah, so more or less Triumph of Treachery was multiplayer games, except it wasn't like teams. It was everybody against each other, right? And it came with this absolutely gorgeous book. Inside the like big thing that like slid out, you had the rules for the Triumph of Treachery and then a nice like cloth bag and then different denomination of actual like empire coinage. Right. So you had like what the gold bars there and then like the silver and the copper and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
You would probably know as WFRP what the heck that was. And then it came with a deck of cards as well. And the deck of cards were essentially different ways that you could screw over the people that you're playing against.
Oh, my God. They were so good.
They were so good. So just Google searching, one of the ones at the top is Dirty Trick. Play when a combat result score is being calculated for a combat. You just add +1 to whatever side that you want. So you could add +1 to like somebody that you just, you know, that took a charge for you. You're like, here's +1. Or you could look at them and be like, hey, I need a gold piece and I'll let you win this combat.
Right. Right? It was so
you don't even have to tell them what the card is.
It was so good to just psychological warfare all the time. Like, it didn't even have to be a combat you were involved in. Like, yeah, the obvious idea is I'm going to use this to make sure I win combat. But it could be like, oh, yeah, if this unit wins combat, they'll overrun into this spot. And then I can charge them in the flank. So I'm going to give it to them so they win.
I got all the cards right here.
Yeah. So it was so good. So ridiculous. And it was like you scored a little bit of coinage every round, depending on like how much you killed, you got points for in the form of those coins. But then the turn order was even randomized with cards. There was like a hammer, a sword, a scepter, and a crown or something. And you just picked one at the start of the game, was like, all right, I'm going to be the hammer. And then you shuffled those cards and just flipped it and said, okay, it's sword's turn first. So you never knew who was going to go next, which I thought was great for the mayhem that was part of that game. You knew it was going to be that way, so you were fine with it.
The nice thing about it is it kind of makes it so, like, when you think about it, it was supported up to 5 players, right? But you could obviously do more, but I don't know how you would have enough cards and coinage for that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for real.
But there's 5 different symbols. There's a hammer, there's a lion trace axe, there's a like a bright wizard staff, a sword, and a shield. And like Dan said, you just took them, you shuffled them up, and then that's, you know, whose order of the turn it was. And then you think about the Battle of 5 Armies from The Hobbit and just the absolute chaos and mayhem, like not even from the movie, just from the book where, Tolkien was just like, I'm going to knock Bilbo out because I don't want to describe this battle because I'm sure it was insane.
Would have tripled the length of that book.
You know what I mean? So like, it's one of the small places in Warhammer where I'm like, I'm okay with someone getting a double turn because it's going to be hilarious.
Yeah, because you reshuffled those cards every round. So like you could go first round 1 and then last round 2 and you'd just be done. But what made it a little more balanced was that every phase, the person whose turn it was had to declare they had declared an enemy that they could like interact with. So
You could only shoot the one enemy.
Yeah, you could only nominate one enemy. And then, like, if you're in combat with multiple other players, when you got to the combat phase, you picked one, and then all the other combats just kind of backed off of each other, which was actually really cool. It made the game way more dynamic, which we kind of have now, just naturally to get ground and fall back in good order. So, like, yeah, you could absolutely just find the old Triumph of Treachery rules and just play it in Old World, but I love... And I'm sure everybody else that's ever played Triumph and Treachery would love to just have a new official thing for it, because it was one of the best supplements they've ever made.
I'd buy that set immediately when it went to pre-order.
Absolutely.
Immediately.
Yeah. Yep.
No questions. I would $200. Yep. I'm buying it.
It's going to be at least that, because you're going to get the coins with it. You're going to get cards. It's not just a book. And that's what was so cool about it. It was more of an experience. Like, it was such a different way to play the game, but it was still Warhammer.
Like, Blood in the Badlands was really fun, and I absolutely adored that they gave us, like, a campaign rule set and also an overarching story of them playing it as well. It was really fantastic, but it was just one book. You know, and it was a relatively thin book as well.
Yeah.
Triumph and Treachery, like you said, it was an experience. It was like, we got five nerds that came by for game night. Let's all beat the hell out of each other.
You just laugh the whole time because it's ridiculous.
The whole time. Two things. The one thing Dan said that, you know, like every single phase, you have to pick an enemy for the phase. You can, and this is in the book, you can bribe other players at any time for anything using any means at all. You know, if you get chosen to be the enemy for that phase, you can give them your coins. You can give them anything you want at all.
The best thing ever is when you're like, okay, I'll give you, you know, 2 silver to not shoot me this turn because I need to make this charge next round. And they say, okay, give me the silver. And you give it to them, like, all right, I'm going to shoot you anyway.
Yes.
That's treachery, right?
It was all about backstabbing.
It was so good. So I'm sorry to go off a super long tangent, because that's what's in this book at all.
At all.
That is not what's here. Sadly, I'm hoping this is just a, you know, to wet your whistle to a proper multiplayer supplement like Triumph and Treachery. I mean, just call it Old World Treachery or something like that. Yeah. I don't know. Before we talk about the little campaign they have in here, Storm in the Wasteland, they have a few pages of new and expanded terrain rules, which is actually pretty awesome. This is one of the best parts of the book, I think.
Love terrain.
Or really the best part of the book. They have some rules for random terrain generation, focusing on fighting in the wasteland. Because that's the whole point of the story here is, you know, Cathay have landed in Marienburg, and they are helping Marienburgers mostly. They were Imperials at this time.
I love a good Marienburger.
Right? I love that name. what's her name? Freydahl, moving down from the north, attacking through, like, Nordland, and then Beastman also attacking out of the Drakvald. So the terrain generation stuff here is to focus on, like, what this part of the empire is like. And it's not super heavily forested, so they gave us a bunch of new little terrain things. They added some clarification on sizes of how big terrain should be. But it's one of those things where it's like, obviously pieces in your collection don't perfectly fit that. You can still use it.
Nobody understands what the word should means, so they had to add that clarification. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right. right. And again, it says should, or no, that's, a terrain generator should measure between 2 and 8 inches at its widest point, right?
Yep.
Should. It's not a hard and fast rule. It's a suggestion, because if you make terrain too big, it's unwieldy for this game with blocks of troops. You don't need huge pieces. So they gave us some rules for scatter terrain placement, which was basically... This isn't super new, but I do like this idea that one person places the terrain and the other person can scatter up to D3 pieces, which is just normal 2D6 scatter die. If you roll a hit, it stays there.
Yep. Yeti.
And then they gave us a couple more, like, new terrain types, like linear terrain, things like rivers and chasms, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
And they added things like fords and bridges. rules for that to cross rivers, even making the river a fast flowing river
that moves people.
That I like this one a lot. I think this is really cool.
It's really cool. And then roads that are like really nice, make you go faster. It's really neat. So the fast flowing river, if a unit has a quarter or more of its models within a fast flowing river at the start of the turn subphase, it takes a strength test. If it fails, it slides D3 inches along the river in the direction it flows. So not only do you put the river down, you have to denote a direction of which way the river is flowing.
I love that.
Yes.
Legitimately. I think that's awesome. Little addition. It's not going to happen all the time. You're not going to have rivers in every game anyway. But when it does happen, it's going to be so cool and thematic. Like, people are trying to walk across this river, but because it's fast flowing, every step they're moving a little to their left or whatever. So now they're over here. You know, they cross the river. They come out on the other side further down the river. It's so realistic, really.
It's so genius.
I like it a lot.
Yeah, and so just a little bit going over like linear terrain features, and again, what they mean by that is like rivers and chasms and all that. Oh my. They actually say like how it should be placed on the battlefield. Excuse me. And it says, actually, these are musts. It's not should. These are musts. So one end is touching the edge of the battlefield. The other end must either touch a different edge of the battlefield, meet another terrain feature where the linear terrain feature will end, so like a stream where it meets a pond, where it tapers to a point, and then it ends there, right, where your chasm just stops. It's cool. It's thanks for the clarification. Like, obviously, your river just doesn't start in the middle of the table.
Right. And they have suggestions. I have I love the header here. Just says, how long is a river, in quotes, to give you suggestions. And then they follow it up with like, okay, if you're going to do it, these are some rules you do need to follow.
Yeah.
Which makes sense. Like, if you have a river and it ends on the table, it should end in a body of water. Like, that's just how rivers work, right?
Or into a chasm.
Or down into a chasm. That'd be kind of cool to have it like perpendicular to the river and have different linear terrain features like that.
I don't hate that at all.
Another thing, I like the road one as well. It says marching troops can move quickly along a well-maintained road. A unit that begins and ends a march move with half or more, half 50% in parentheses, or more of its models upon the same well-maintained road that does not leave that road while moving may move an additional D3 inches. That's huge. You're already marching, so you're already going quite a bit faster, but more movement's more movement. That can be huge. To set things up. We know how important movement and placement is in this game.
You know how I know you don't play dwarves?
Because D3 inches is a massive deal to dwarves.
It's my entire movement. That's triple my movement, potentially.
You could triple your movement. You could have dwarves moving 9 inches. They're running so fast. You can see their legs.
That's like a normal Slaanesh move.
That's so good.
Anywhoozles, I think this is great. Again, it just means it's a well-maintained game.
They're giving us more stuff. They're giving us more toys to play with. I love it. The next
more
page
stuff is more better.
My favorite in the whole book. My favorite thing here is building rules.
Heck yeah.
This was something that seemed like a glaring omission from the core book.
Agreed. But
we got them here. I love it because I always love the idea of having a unit move into a building and having rules for that, garrisoning it. So a lot of this stuff is pretty similar to what we've seen in past versions of this game. Real similar to 8th edition stuff. You can only be infantry. This is a troop type is infantry. Okay, so you can have, it just says infantry, so it can be regular, heavy, or even monstrous. It doesn't say anything about monstrous, but it has to be unit strength 20 or less. So no units of 7 minotaurs. You can only have 6 minotaurs.
This is the best, the absolute best. The mini wargaming.
Yep.
I'm so sorry, Luca. Oh, it's the best. Man, I want to watch that game again. That was so much fun.
God, Minotaur saving with his shield alone, his parry save.
Yeah, against Malekith and his stupid dragon. Kept parrying a dragon.
So good.
Oh, it's so funny. If people want to know what that's about, join the Discord and ask me. I'll give you the story.
Heck yeah. It's so good. Or find the game on mini wargaming.
Yeah, it's only in the vault, so you got to be a vault member.
Oh, it was a vault game. That's right.
Uh huh.
All right. So buildings, you got to be infantry unit strength 20 or less. You can occupy a building by moving into base contact during the remaining moves phase of the movement phase. You can't charge into a building.
Makes sense.
Once the movement is complete, remove it from the table and make a note that it now occupies the building, which is usually like, I like to like take the standard of the champion and put it on top of the building somewhere. If there's like a little balcony or a chimney, something.
Balconies.
I like that visual representation. It just kind of looks cool. Like, hey, I have this building now.
Friggin' love balconies. And then, you know that.
You what?
I love balconies. You know that. You
love balconies. When we used to play 40K all the time, anytime you would place objectives, Taylor would compulsively place the objective on a balcony if it was possible.
Has to go there.
And it always made the game more interesting, honestly.
I'm like, oh, I wonder where this is. Oh, right here.
Oh, great. Now I can't measure to the next closest balcony. Thanks. While a unit is in a building, all measurements to or from that unit are made to or from the building itself.
And
a unit that occupies the building has 360 vision arc and can draw a line of sight over and through other models.
Man, I'm throwing so many wizards in buildings.
Right? So they're effectively like a large target that has three, like a large target that's also skirmishing.
Love it.
You know, sort of. Really, really cool. Leaving a building, I feel like previous editions didn't always totally cover these rules very well. It was like, well, I guess I just measure from the edge of the building. So it says, unless it's fleeing, a unit can leave a building during the remaining moves by making a follow-up move or by pursuing an enemy. So if you win combat, you can chase people out of a building. Simply place the unit back on the table so that at least one model is in base contact with the building. The unit's movement then ends. Whilst the unit occupies a building, it cannot declare a charge. You can't charge out of a building, makes sense. But you just have to have one model in base contact. So you can pop out, you know,
anywhere,
facing any which way. You could have one little corner of the back rank touching it. And it, I think it makes it completely worth not being able to charge for a turn to go into a building and then pop out the other side the next turn and have, you know, the world's like your oyster. You can face whatever direction you want. Like, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, huge movement buff, especially if you get on a well-maintained road and you're a dwarf player and you roll a 3 and then you march into a building. Sorry.
So good. I love that. And then the next turn, because the building, what is it? Buildings that measure at least 4 inches at the widest point may be designated as occupiable. They say most terrain features should be no more than 12 inches. Could you imagine being able to move into a building and then pop out 12 inches away?
Yes, that sounds awesome. Yes.
They can move through a building faster than they can move on the tabletop, potentially.
Makes zero sense.
All right, I'm going to talk about flee, and then you could talk about buildings and shooting.
Yeah.
So unit that flees while occupying a building does not move. A unit that counts as fleeing and must rally as normal, but will hide behind the safety of the walls. They just hunker down. They don't actually leave the building, which
I like that
makes
a lot.
Sense.
Yep. I like that a lot. And it's very interesting because I wonder if they will be able to then take objectives while they're in a building.
I guess it would come down to the rule for the objective.
Right. Because if the building is within range of the objective and there's a unit strength is high enough, you know.
Unit strength is high enough.
Your unit strength is high enough, Dan. Buildings and shooting. So if you want to shoot from a building, guess what? They have upper story windows, flat roofs, making them advantageous to missile troops. To represent this, up to half of the models occupying a building can shoot and cast spells.
They can shoot what?
Can shoot.
Lizard.
No, the lizards can't shoot, Dan. They have slings.
The best part is I was holding the mic up to the mic or my phone up to the microphone. I don't think Taylor could see it at all.
No, I didn't see. I was on. I was looking at images of Warhammer tables. So that's dope. You got, you know, a unit of 20 in a building, and one of them's a wizard like that dude, and 9 troops can shoot. It's nice.
Got it.
Shooting at a building, so a model, any model that can draw a line of sight to an occupied building can target the unit that occupies it, and they are behind full cover. makes sense. They're kind of
perfect sense.
Large target, and they got walls and stuff. Easy. Should an occupied building be hit by a template, every model within it risks being hit. However, due to the protection offered by the walls, they're hit on a 5-up rather than a 4-up.
That seems brutal.
Yeah.
I think
we screw templates over even more.
The what?
We screw templates over even more.
No, I think it's better. You can hit every model in the unit. If you got a unit of 20 dudes in there, they're all taking the hit. Say it's a flame template. Normally you're getting a decent amount of hits, but certainly not the whole unit.
Yeah, average is about 6 or 7.
On a 5+, yeah, that doesn't sound nearly as good as a 4+, but you're probably getting more hits overall.
Well, here's the cool thing is if any part of that template touches any part of that building, everybody gets hit.
That seems a little silly, but otherwise, how else would you do that? I feel like this is a streamlined way that works well enough without bogging it down to a ridiculous amount.
No, I completely agree. It's these rules were very needed, and they did a good job with them. Speaking of which, hey, cannons, should an occupied
incoming building
should an occupied building be hit by a cannon, the unit suffers D3 strength 4 hits with an AP of 1 as the stones and shrapnel explode from the structure, and then the cannonball immediately stops.
Meh.
Fantastic.
I'm not a huge fan of that one. I think at least one model in the unit should get hit by the cannonball.
I don't know. At the same time, cannons are really good. So this is kind of a nice deterrent.
Right. I mean, at that point, there's almost no reason to shoot a unit in a building with a cannonball. D3?
D3. It should be D6.
Like, it should be at least D6. And I think it should be, even if it was D3, I think it should be D3 plus D3 strength 4 plus 1 at the strength and AP of the cannon. You know?
Yeah.
Because, like, not every building is built with stone. Like, what if you got...
Correct.
You're garrisoning an orc hut. Why would the, you know... skins that make the walls of this hut stop a cannonball?
No, that's totally fair. It's absolutely fair. Yeah, all right, that one I'm not a fan of anymore. Piss off, incoming.
You're welcome. Can't believe you did this.
I can't believe you've done this. Buildings are coming.
One rule on this page.
And I'm over the
fine. I think
I'm over the whole game. Screw this. No, insulting a building.
Just kidding.
So when shut up, Dan. I'm talking. I love you. Lizard. When an enemy unit charges a unit within a building, it charges the building itself rather than the models. Whilst engaged in combat, both units are considered to be in skirmish formation.
Huh?
However, due to the close confines of the tower, only 5 models from either side can join the fighting rank.
Dang. I find it very interesting that they said 5 models.
Yes, agreed.
And not like
unit strength,
because you only have 20 unit strength in the building. So again, if I've got my 6 minotaurs in there that are unit strength 18, and you charge me with regular infantry, and so you get 5 dudes, I held up 4 fingers on accident. You get 5 dudes, I get 5 minotaurs, you're done.
Good luck.
What's interesting, so double check this. So it says unit charges unit within the building, charges the building itself. However, due to close confines, only 5 models of either unit can join the fighting rank. I feel like they're missing a very important clarification here.
Go on.
Do they count as base to base?
I mean, I would imagine if they're in combat, yeah.
If they're not base to base, they have 1 attack, even in the fighting rank, right? If they're base to base, they get their full 3 or whatever it might be.
I'm going to use my theater of the mind assumption that they're base to base.
I don't know, though, because it says they charge the building, not the models inside.
Yeah, fair enough.
They're in skirmish formation, but it doesn't say anything about them being like base to base. I hope there's an FAQ for that soon. I would rule it as, now my minotaurs are kind of screwed. They get 1 attack each.
Yeah, I mean, so but that kind of levels the playing field.
Yeah, maybe that's not a good thing to have them in the building.
Right. There's also nowhere to run, Dan. I don't know if you knew that.
There's always somewhere to run.
There's nowhere to run.
In a building.
Unless you're in a building, then you can't run anywhere. So a unit that occupies a building will not give ground or fall back in good order. Instead, the unit holds its ground and the combat continues. Should a unit occupying a building break and flee from combat, it will find itself trapped within the walls, unable to escape quickly. Such units are completely destroyed and removed from play.
Oof.
In such cases, a unit belonging to the winning side may choose to take the occupancy of the building. So you better hope, that the dudes, the five dudes in your fighting rank, can fend off whatever five dudes in the other fighting rank. Because if those five dudes in your fighting rank don't do well enough and you break and flee from combat, your entire unit's dead. Goodbye, yeah. Sorry.
That can be pretty brutal, but you really got to think about what units are you garrisoning with now.
Correct.
You don't want to bother anything with Horde, probably, because you don't get rank bonuses anyway because you're skirmishing. I think Skaven have a tough time here because they rely on that so much. Like, if it's Storm Vermin, they're pretty good at combat. But, like, Clan Rats in a building and there's only 20 of them, like, no, why even bother? Yes, sir, raising your hand.
They're the only S-tier infantry, Saurus Warriors.
Don't even just let them have the building. Who cares? It's theirs now.
Oh, who's your five dudes? Oh, who's okay? I have three attacks because I have frenzy.
Right. The building is now.
I claim this building in the name of Lizard.
You're never gonna shove them out of there. They're too good. Five of them.
They're too good.
Even if they aren't in base to base and they still get one attack, they're still good.
Yes, sir. Yeah, this is why I'm glad that the Watchtower is not a thing anymore. Anyways.
Oh, gross. Don't get me started.
Speaking of the Watchtower, let's talk about some new magic items.
New magic items? I thought we'd look at the new terrain generators.
I don't have that picture.
I didn't send you the terrain generator pages?
No.
Whoops. There's two pages of Wasteland terrain to randomly generate and Shadowlands.
Okay.
And these are areas, you know, around the Sea of Claws, around Marienburg. I'm not going to go over all the rules here, but the idea is you can just randomly generate a bunch of terrain, and it gives us specific rules for different types of terrain that then are used in the scenarios after this. So I'm going to read through the ones for Wasteland, and then you can give me a couple you want to hear the rules on. All right, we got a shallow stream, a track. Which is like a wagon track, not like mine car track. Woods, a hill, a marsh, a saltwater bog, a fen, a scrubland, standing ruins, fishing village, or sand dune.
Okay.
A lot of stuff in there.
I have a question for you, Dan.
Question.
I would like you to tell me the difference between a bog and a fen.
Right? All right. So it's a saltwater bog, actually. Saltwater bog, it says, in the wasteland, solid ground can quickly become a bottomless mire. A saltwater bog counts as dangerous terrain. However, any model that begins its movement within, passes through, or ends its movement within a saltwater bog will suffer a mishap on a roll of 1 to 2 rather than a 1.
Interesting.
Gets sucked down into the muck and the mire. Whereas a fen is an area of reed-filled wetland, dead trees, and stagnant pools of water. A fen counts as difficult terrain. Not nearly as bad.
Would you like to hear the AI definition between a bog and a fen?
I want to hear anything AI, but okay.
Bogs are fed by acidic rainwater and are nutrient-poor, while fens receive water from mineral-rich groundwater or streams and are less acidic and more nutrient-rich.
Oh.
Bogs are characterized by sphagnum moss, while fens typically support more grasses, sedges, and wildflowers.
I love sedges.
I don't even know what a sedge is.
You ever been in a bog? Bogs are so cool. Oh my God, they're the best. I went to DEC camp for a couple years when I was a kid. Because my mom wanted me to do more stuff over the summer, right? Department of Environmental Conservation, for those that don't know what the DEC is. And we, the couple of years I went there, we would go on a canoe trip across this lake up in the Adirondacks to this bog. And it was the coolest thing because it's like there's no real ground. There's this peat moss or this peat, not moss, that like floats on top of the water. So, like, you can, like, bounce the ground up and down.
Oh, that's cool.
And then there are parts where, like, we would, like, wade through the bog where it's just, it's like, really thin mud. It's, like, dirty water that you're kind of wading through. And then you can get to these spots where you can, like, climb up onto the peat and then just, it just squelches all over. And then there's sometimes there are spots you just randomly fall in because you can't tell if it's solid or not. But they smell weird because of the acidity. So I love the idea of actually having bogs on the table and having rules for that. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. Huh. All right. Interesting.
So, and then we have the Shadowlands Terrain Generator. So this is areas that the Chainmaker has already pushed through and basically claimed for Chaos. So okay. They've been kind of ruined. So this is where you can get a road, dense woods, a hill, a ravine, standing stones, scrubland again, rocky ground, haunted ruins, shardlands, chasm, or bottomless pit.
I want that one every time.
Bottomless pit?
Every time, Dan.
Right? A seemingly bottomless pit opens within the landscape. A bottomless pit is an impassable terrain feature measuring between 3 and 6 inches at its widest point.
I don't want it to be impassable. I want things that touch it to die. I want it to be, what is that, lethal terrain? I want anything that touches it to die. You get no save. You get pushed into a bottomless pit, guess what? Dead.
Yes, unfortunately, there's not anything quite that nasty anymore, or at least not in this supplement.
Well, that's dumb. I still like the phrase bottomless pit, though, and that's mainly because of Yu-Gi-Oh!
I don't know that exact reference, but...
So there was a trap.
I didn't say I wanted to know it. I'm sorry, that came out so aggressive.
That's all right. I told you to shut up earlier.
Oh, man.
It's so natural, too. Nice job. You're such a teacher. Oh, well, that sounds incredible. So essentially, you just randomly determine, what is it, like D something amount of terrain features?
What do they suggest here? Well, I got to go.
Is it a should or a must?
Should. I think it was more in the... It was in a different spot here. Battles in the Wasteland. I think it just says use the usual rules from the rule book.
Gotcha.
I don't remember what that was exactly. Because we typically, when we play games, just Taylor and I, we use the old 8th edition rule of D6 plus 4 terrain pieces.
It just made so much sense.
It fit very well. I think the current rule is like 1 per square foot.
Yeah, that's so much math.
Or something like that. Or 1 per... every 12 inch length. So like a 6 by 4 foot table should have 6 pieces of terrain, which doesn't seem like nearly enough even for this game. But you and I both agree that we just like more terrain.
Yeah. Terrain good.
Terrain do be good.
Terrain good.
So the last thing I want to talk about right now is this little campaign called Storm in the Wasteland. That's supposed to be, Cathayan Empire versus Chaos. Like every other Arcane Journal scenario, it always says the scenario may be played with any two armies of the player's choosing. It's a bit of an escalation campaign where you start with 2,500 point armies, and then it moves to 3,000, and then 3,500.
Ooh, I love a good escalation.
So real big.
Yeah.
And these are cool because they feature a bunch of those new terrain features that are detailed that we just talked about. So I'll try to show you the first one is called a timely arrival. So you can see the map shows where they want you to place these different types of terrain.
Yeah, I dig that.
And this one has an awesome new piece of art of a Shigengan Lord on a Longma fighting a Chaos Lord on a Manticore.
Dope.
Awesome piece of work.
Manticores are so cool.
It's really, really well done. Again, wish I could give the artist credit, but it's great. this one's cool because the attacker is Chaos, 2,500 points. The defender is, you start with a garrison of an empire of 1,000 points of an Empire of Man Grand Army. Mm-hmm. And then you have 1,500 points of a relief force that you can see the defender has. Deployment zone A is where the garrison starts, kind of in the middle-ish of the table.
Sure.
And then the Cathay army shows up in like a typical deployment zone, 12 inches up from the long table edge. And the idea is that the Chaos Army kind of surprised this Empire garrison where they weren't totally ready. So they're not deployed super properly. And then you have the Cathayan guys a little backed up behind them.
Yep.
Couple important parts of this one is that the attacking player, Chaos, wins a bonus 100 victory points for each character in the defender's army that has been slain. And the defending player wins a bonus 100 victory points for each character in the garrison army that is still alive at the end of the game.
That's kind of dope.
Interesting. You want they're trying to keep the Empire people alive because they're the whole point of them coming here is to save them, right?
Yep.
Sounds pretty
Came down out of a lightning storm. Oh, sorry.
One thing I like about this one is they are linked battles, so they have some changes to the following ones. The next one is called Assault on Leonin, and they have a cool thing. It's Boons of Victory. So if the attacker, Chaos, won the previous battle, once per game, each character in the Chaos becomes the defender in this one, may reroll the d6 when rolling on Gaze of the Gods.
Oh, that's cool.
Which is kind of neat. And
that's so thematic.
Right? Because they won before, the Chaos Gods are looking favorably upon them, and they get to have a better chance of getting good stuff.
Yeah.
If the Empire / Cathay won the first battle, then in this one it says, once per game, each unit in the attacker's army whose troop type is War Machine may re-roll an artillery die.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, that's real good. Real good stuff there. So this one is set up in that kind of standard diagonal deployment. And this time, Cathay / Empire are the attackers. Chaos are the defenders, because the Empire is trying to then push Chaos out of the wasteland. This is 3,000 points. Nothing crazy here. You should have Mao Ying and Friedel the Chainmaker in these armies. Let's see. The only thing that's different is, let's see, scenario special rules. The Gods Watch On. It's the character or unit champion in the Defender's Force who slays an opponent in a challenge must immediately roll in the Gaze of the Gods table.
Nice.
Which is one reason why they also build in, if you won the game before, they get to reroll that once. The Might of Grand Cathay is the other rule. Before the game begins, each unit with the War Machine unit type in the attacker's force may shoot as if it were the shooting phase of their turn.
That's really cool, actually.
There's a little imbalance there, I think, with those two rules, the Gaze of the Gods rule versus your War Machine gets to shoot before the game starts, but it's still pretty dope.
Hey, by the way, cannon!
Right? And you got Cathay Great Cannons there, like, terrifying.
Could you imagine? You're watching like a great movie about these two armies. It's been building up. They're gonna like charge into each other, and like right, they're lined up in the opposite sides of the field. And then I'm just picturing like a two tower situation where the old guy accidentally lets go of that arrow. Somebody accidentally just hit the cannon with the little like fire thing. Just everyone looks over like, bro, really?
That's so good. This was funny to me because, like, obviously Cathay has a huge upper hand here. Like, they just get to shoot more. Chaos has to kill somebody in a challenge first before they might get a bonus.
Or become stupid. But you can re-roll it to become stupid again.
Just still roll a one. Yeah, always. And then for victory, the attacking player, Cathay, wins 50 victory points for each of their units that's wholly within the defender's player's deployment zone with a unit strength of 10 or more. So you can't just float balloons over there and get victory points.
Dumb.
And the defending player, Chaos, wins 50 victory points for each unit, for each War Machine unit they destroy.
Okay. That's actually pretty cool.
That ambushers really
might
like,
actually come into play.
Right? And I really like that now you have to think when you're building your Cathay Empire army, do I include a bunch of War Machines to get those extra shots? Or do I not include so many because they could be very easy victory points and bonus victory points for the enemy?
I have a better idea.
There's no dwarves right now.
Lizard.
I did not see that coming. All right, and then the last battle, the last battle is called Reclamation of Hollum. We have very standard pitch battle deployment, except Chaos gets a special little shrine because now the idea is that the Cathay Empire army is now assaulting a town that Chaos has set up as their like beachhead. They are defending this town now, so Chaos is actually a defender again.
Dope.
So depending on who won the last battle, if the Cathay Empire won the previous battle, 0 to 3 units in their army may have Vanguard special rule at no additional cost.
Yes.
Additionally, 0 to 3 units in their army may have the Stubborn special rule at no additional cost.
Yes.
Right? Free Stubborn? Free Vanguard's not as movement? Good as it was because you can't charge after Vanguarding now, but it's still great.
Who cares?
Now, you get Defender, free movement. Right? Extra move. Awesome. Chaos. If they won the last battle, they may write an additional 500-point muster list using the Warriors of Chaos or Wolves of the Sea. Every unit in this muster list has the Ambusher special rule at no additional cost and must begin the game in reserve.
Wow.
Taylor has a big old shocked face right now.
That's actually kind of cool.
That's so cool. Like, yeah, they're all in Ambush. We just went over how much we hate Ambush earlier, but it's free 500 points.
Yeah, out of 3,500 points, here's an extra 500 for you to just pop up whenever.
Right.
And if you're playing Freidel, doesn't she allow you to reroll Ambush results?
She gets a whole bunch of Ambush and stuff, yeah.
Yeah.
And again, the idea is you have Freidel and Mao Ying. Let me just double check. Oh, that's not what I meant.
It was the best accident that's ever happened.
I'm just kidding. I did it on purpose. Let's see. Chainmaker. She gets extra points for banners. What's the one? Commander and Captain. Nope. Oh, that was so good. Peerless Raider. There it is. Chaos Marauders. Marauder Horsemen. So she gets to add 1 or -1 to the result when determining the role for Chaos Marauders, Marauder Horsemen, Marauder Tribe, Huskarls, or Berserkers with Ambush Special Rule that is currently on reserve. The same muster list. So
yeah, it says an extra 500 points.
It says an additional 500-point muster list. So it's actually a different
that's
army.
That's dumb.
So unfortunately, she wouldn't be able to help that, but it's still free 500 points.
Yeah, that hopefully show up.
Right, I'm not going to complain about that if I were the one to win the last fight.
Oh, that's yeah, for sure. Dope. Extra 500 points sounds great.
So otherwise, 3,500 points. The idea is that it's the Jade Fleet versus Wolves of the Sea. But you can field it whatever you want, of course. And then we have standard pitch battle deployment, but also Freidel's Monument, a special feature measuring up to 6 inches at its widest point, is placed directly in the center of the deployment line for the Chaos. And it counts as a monument. It counts as an arcane monolith and a monument of glory.
Okay.
It does cool stuff. I don't remember exactly off the top of my head. Defender deploys first, then attacker. Blah, blah, blah. Attacker goes first, as always in these kind of things. A couple special rules. Characters in the Chaos Army may reroll the D6 when rolling on the Gaze of the Gods table again. And Storm Dragon's Triumph. Whenever Mao Ying slays an enemy character but not unit champions in combat, she may regain a single wound lost earlier in the battle.
Okay.
She's already regaining loons when she transforms, so she's going to be really hard to kill.
Okay.
And then victory, standard victory points, but the attacking player wins 50 points for each character in the army that is alive and not fleeing, and the defender wins 50 victory points for each character in the attacker's army that was slain in a challenge.
That's dope.
So they're pretty cool. They're not anything too crazy, but I think that's fine. The idea is you play them as a little linked campaign. If we had Cathay, yeah. I would love to play through this. But
we got to get through the stupid high elves and the warriors first.
Yes. Oh, we totally forgot to talk about games played and hobbies hobbied.
Yeah, we did.
Did you do that because you haven't done any hobbies?
No, I painted Legion stuff. I put white and black on Stormtroopers, so they're done.
Nice. Say that's all you need, right?
Right. And then I painted some terrain and I started to paint it and it came out really bad. And then I messaged some people on how to paint FDM printed terrain. And they're like, no, don't use washes because it makes all the lines show up.
Yep. Yeah.
So
it can be tough. The 3D printed stuff with FDM can be difficult to paint for sure. You just got to accept that you're going to have those weird lines.
Well, what's nice is a lot of the stuff that was printed is things that it's just like gray.
Yeah.
You know,
well, Star Wars, it's all gray and black and white anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the 70s. It's either gray, black, white, or beige. Like,
oh, lots of beige. That's true.
Uh-huh.
I've actually gotten some stuff done lately to actually go along with the idea of that campaign.
Yeah.
I've got five Marauder Horsemen almost done. The ones from the new Dark Oath box that have like
spears.
They're almost finished. I got Ishaya Vess totally done, and I put her on a little marble rock that I took from the backyard because her model is like super pointed forward with that big old trident. But I raised her up so she might point, you know, poke her thing over enemy models,
yeah,
make her possible to line up. But she was a really fun model to paint. Got those Marauders finished, built. I finally got my dude on a unicorn for High Elves. I can never remember the name of that unit. What is it called? Storm Weaver.
Uh-huh.
Finally came in. I forget when I ordered it, when it was on it was a made-to-order thing. I think it was May, maybe June.
Mm-hmm.
Finally came with Goros Warhoof. Finally have that model. I've wanted him for like 20 years. Awesome. Got him built. Got him just primed tonight. Hopefully we'll get some paint on him this weekend. At least Goros, because I just love the idea of a Centaur character. That's super exciting.
It's freaking awesome.
Finally have him.
And he ambushes.
So much ambushing. That's garbage. All my armies ambush, and I don't want to do it.
Yeah, you pick the best armies.
But yeah, so that I haven't had much games played lately. Again, with school starting up and whatnot, there just hasn't been any time for that. I think the last game I played was a solo game of Marvel Champions the other morning before anybody else was up, really.
Yeah, I think the only other game that I played was Tuesday when we were streaming. I was doing so well.
You were.
And then I got a little too ambitious. It died a lot. Happens. Fell for the most classic blunder. Unleash the Phoenix.
Oh, no, don't do that.
Yeah, I hit certainly back did.
Real hard.
Really hard, turns out. Anywho's.
But there are a bunch more, you know, the standard amount of Arcane Journal special items for Cathay. My throat hurts. I don't really want to go over them all right now. Maybe another time. There's a bunch of really good ones in here. I'm sure nobody is surprised about, but it's cool stuff. I think this book is neat. It's one of those, like, I kind of wish it was just an Arcane Journal and then the campaign book separate.
Yeah, what's kind of cool about it is besides the magic items, you don't need it. You don't need this book.
Not really. Like,
you know what I mean? Like, the campaign is cool. The building and linear terrain features are cool. The multiplayer games, like, you just ignore them. But like, besides the magic items, you don't need this book. And you don't need this book if you're using Old World Builder. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, I mean, even if you're already a Cathay player. The only thing, like you said, you need it for the magic items if you don't use like online builders that have all those rules in there already.
Did you see that Old World Builder put folders now? You can put your army list into folders.
Yeah, that's really nice.
It's the best.
I have a huge list.
I need to actually like give them money at some point because, oh my gosh, it's so worth it. Anyways, go on.
I would too. But yeah, so like if you're a Cathay player, you might want the book for the additional lore and painting ideas and stuff. There's a lot of cool pictures.
Yeah.
I think the artwork in it is fantastic. I think it's probably the best part of the book in addition to the terrain rules that we liked. But at the same time, it's kind of like, I don't know. I don't regret buying it.
No.
Because I am going to read through the whole story of it. And I do like how they're trying to have a pretty cohesive narrative between the different books about this invasion that like is basically the preface for the Great War Against Chaos, right? Freydahl is kind of the harbinger for Asavar Kul, is kind of the idea. So I think it's leading into our predictions of we're gonna get the Great War as like a big campaign supplement for this.
We better
down the line at some point.
I'll be so angry if we don't.
For everybody will be, because why would you set it just before that huge event in the world's history if you weren't going to use it?
We're all done.
Just kidding.
And by the way,
Asavar Kul model for you. Get wrecked. Everybody wants that. He's so cool looking. I mean, he's a Chaos Warrior. He kind of looks like all of them, but that I love that picture. I think it's an Adrian Smith painting of him just on that demonic warhorse, just looking like, look how awesome I am, just with this huge sword and this huge shield.
So chaos.
He's so awesome.
So Warhammer.
So yeah, I think there's a few great things in this book. I think a few things really missed the mark. Like, why did they even include that page about multiplayer battles? I don't know. but again, I don't regret buying it, but I'm not going to suggest run out and buy this book.
Yeah. I don't know how to put this. Like, buy it, obviously, if you want all the lore, you want all the dope art, like, you're a completionist, all that sort of stuff. But if you're just like, hey, I'm just a Vampire Counts player, and I'm only going to, like, local games and stuff, you don't need this book. Like, we talked about a lot of the cool terrain stuff, and guess what? You can play the game without it, you know? The building stuff would be great to have, but I'm not saying don't buy the book. Buy the book. But at the same time, like, you don't need it if you don't want it. Yeah. It's not like some of the other Arcane journals where I'm trying to think, like, as a dwarf player, I'm so glad that I have the dwarf Arcane journal because there are things in there that I absolutely need. But as a Cathay player, like, besides the magic items, don't really need this book.
There's not a single new unit in it like every other Arcane journal.
Yep.
Right? They didn't even give, like, Cathay. Like, they could have. I don't understand why there's not a Cathay ranged unit at all.
Yeah.
The Jade Host
is bad.
There's even pictures, like drawings of
the handgun
weapons of the handguns, and then like little blurbs about how their handguns are so great, if I can find it.
And I wonder if they just didn't have the incredible.
Right? They look cool.
They're
flintlock guns with a Cathayan flare, little dragony bits on it and stuff. Like, why that wasn't a new unit in this army, in this book, I don't know. I know, obviously, there's a lot with, like, it's brand new. They can only produce so much at once. But, like, why have a second Arcane journal then? I don't know. I feel like the Jade Fleet army in this is just so disappointing in that it doesn't really add anything. Like, wow, you can take some of the worst Empire units as mercenaries. Great. They don't even, you can take more core that doesn't fill your core. I love that.
And I wonder if maybe there was some sort of like production issue where they just could not get minis out in time or something like that. So they just ripped out all of the new units out of this book. But I don't know. This was really quick after the other Arcane Journal that we got for Cathay. Really so quick. Maybe just publish something else and wait. I don't know.
Yeah,
I mean, I have zero insider knowledge as well. So
all the rules in here that weren't part of the Army of Infamy easily could have just been put into the match play guide.
Yeah.
Like, absolutely. Why weren't they just there? Why weren't these rules about linear terrain and buildings in the match play guide?
Again, I have just weird feeling that they were like, we can't produce ranged minis fast enough or in the correct time.
I mean, they had to know that Cathay was going to sell like gangbusters. Like,
I don't know what that means, but yeah, absolutely. The only thing I buy are hotcakes. So,
oh my God. You would. But yeah, I would say this is probably the first thing that I've seen them produce that, like, there are things I love about it, but at the same time, it's kind of like, why?
Yeah.
Yep. Why is this?
Yeah. Why this? Yeah. So when we get our third Grand Cathay Arcane Journal.
That might actually have something new in it.
Right? Where it just has, like, oh, look, you can make ruins that you can do stuff with. Anyways.
I mean, at some point, I would love to play through this little three scenario campaign. We would just substitute something for Cathay.
I would like be orbs or whatever, because it has to do with war machines, right? Like, that's right? Really,
that makes perfect sense. Yeah, and then I could just be chaos. Like, I would love to play through that at some point. We have that more or less, so that's something we can definitely do down the line. So it's not like useless, but
oh my gosh, 3,500
my favorite product they've come out with.
Right. 3,500 points of doors would be fantastic. Now, before we get into our end of the show, normal stuff, like, you know, going to professionalcasual.com, where you can have all of our other social podcasts, blogs, merch, everything is on there. Professionalcasual.com is fantastic. Before we get all to all of that stuff, Dan, how would you model a chasm on a table?
With an axe.
Just thunk. All right, that's a chasm. Because rivers, you know, anything that you put on a table, unless it's like built into the table, is raised.
Yeah.
So is it just smoke and mirrors? Like,
you're smoke and mirrors. I actually think mysterio. They have a little note about that. Where is that? You keep talking while I look.
So while Dan's looking, start playing Dot Games. Look for Bad GM Dan, and you can play RPGs with Dan. He's running a whole bunch of different RPGs, like the, I think it's WFRP where you're doing the All Mages thing, or is that the Old World? Yeah, WFRP. There's the Old World All Dwarf Expedition to take back Carrick.
I did get to do that once. It was a blast. The Old World RPG is pretty great. We had a lot of fun killing goblins and almost getting killed by squigs.
Tracks.
The squigs were shockingly effective. They were ones I had to make up rules for. I may have made them a tad too strong, but people had fun anyway. They were shocking, so it was great.
Shocking surplus of squigs is still my favorite special rule that I've ever come up with.
My favorite moment in the game was when one of the slayers survived everything and they were getting out of the place, which they're all a little sad that nobody died, and he fell down a cliff to his death. He spent a fate point to land on some appropriately placed moss and didn't die. He was like, this is not glorious. I'm burning my fate point to not die. And I was like,
this is not good. A favorable death. Yeah, so fair enough.
But that was great. I'm also have a Cosmere RPG game listed on there. If you're into or curious about the Stormlight Archives by Brandon Sanderson, and that world is super awesome. I love it. The Cosmere RPG. I kickstarted it, just came out, just kind of waiting for my physical copies, but I have all the PDF stuff. So I'm looking to start up a game of that. Once we get some players, it'll be Monday nights.
I keep hearing a lot about the Stormlight Archives, and at this point I just need to read it.
Oh, it's so good. I love it. I think you'd really like it.
I just can't get over the fact that this person's name is Brandon Sanderson, because it looks like it should be Branderson Sanderson.
Right. I usually in my head say Sandin Branderson just for fun.
That's his name now. Anyways, you have the page jump.
He's definitely my favorite author at the moment. The Mistborn series is also fantastic.
I've heard of that one as well.
Super good. And that's going to have its own RPG later that's in development. But this, I found what it was. It just said, unlike low and high linear obstacles which rise up from the battlefield, linear terrain features are best described as, quote, cutting into the battlefield, thus presenting obstacles to movement and hazards to life and limb due to their width, their crashing waters, their hazardous footing, or their potentially limitless depth. So it didn't actually give any tips about that. Just use it as an example. Like, linear terrain features are, like, in the ground.
Yep. Makes sense. Like trenches and stuff.
And so typically that's modeled, like, just 2D.
Yeah. Twitch.tv/professional casual network, where we have games every Tuesday. Dr. D's Disaster Zone, which I don't think he's streaming right now, which is unheard of.
I mean, we're recording at a time that's unheard of for us.
That's true. Ben gets on there every now and then, does some solo missions and plays some random shenanigans. Friggin' love that guy. Ben's the best.
For real.
You want to send us something? P.O. Box G, Stumps. West Oneonta, New York, 13861. And I only remember that because it's written down. Or you can call or text us at 603-803-3235. Send pictures of your feet to Tim.
Tim loves it.
You know what? We would love a review from you on Apple Podcast or Audible. You leave us a 5-star review. Yeah, you.
Oh,
nice. That would be super duper doopy doopy. And we will read your 5-star review off here on the podcast. I'll read a 5-star review. It's going to be fantastic. Dan, you got anything you want to say to the peoples?
Oh, wait. Hold on.
Let me guess. It's when you're rolling dice, make sure that you roll them rice.
Lizard.
Yeah.
Your dice ever roll sixes unless it's a...
Lizard.
And then roll lizard. Love y'all.
I want to get some dice with lizards on the six.
Yes. Oh my God, yes. All right, I love you. I gotta go search for dice. Bye.
Okay, love you. Bye.
Thanks so much for listening. If you enjoyed this show, check out all the other great shows here at the Professional Casual Network. Like what, Danny?
I'll tell you, on Mondays, we've got the Lost Omens podcast, our Pathfinder 2E actual play, hosted by me, playing through the Extinction Curse AP. Also, streaming on twitch.tv/professionalcasualnetwork at 7 p.m. Eastern time, you can check out, oh yeah, The Power Phase, our Marvel Crisis Protocol live battle report show. On Tuesdays, the podcast version of Wait, Did I Roll a Wild? Our Marvel Crisis Protocol Povlog is available. On Wednesdays, alternating releases on the Patreon, we have Settling the Southlands, our homebrew Wolforp actual play, and The Slithering, a Pathfinder 2nd Edition actual play. And on Thursdays, live at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on twitch.tv/professionalcasualnetwork, we've got Wait, Did I Roll a Wild? Our Marvel Crisis Protocol Povlog.
You can also check out back episodes of Elite Eight Showdown and the first 39 episodes of the Lost Omens podcast, the first 24 episodes of Settling the Southlands, and the first handful of episodes of The Slithering on the YouTube at youtube.com/theprofessionalcasual.